Accession number 18624, Reel 7.
Dickie Sweet, Reel. Dickie Sweet, Reel 7.
Yeah.
You were saying about the Commander O in this kamikaze attack.
Yeah. He and I arrived at the door leading out onto the passageway where it gave you access up to the bridge or down to the flight deck. We arrived on the platform and we got the blast from the kamikaze explosion coming up and lifted the commander and I off our feet and dumped us back in through the operations room on our backsides. So by being a bit slower, we survived it. But again, that kamikazes were... one found it hard to accept the fact that you were fighting a man who's way up there in the sky who is determined to kill himself and kill you as well. It was an uncanny feeling. I mean, the Germans always fought cleanly. You know, they wanted to live probably as much as we did. But I was glad when the Pacific War ended. I'd had my whack by then.
But you were not airborne in the Pacific.
No. I was then had reached the top of my branch, and I was part of the air operations team, which you know, did all the arrangements of briefings, etc. A commander observer, who again is an observer. The lieutenant was also an observer, but I think this the Formidable was his first ship, probably.
What did you think of the American Navy?
Oh, the ultra efficient in the Pacific Fleet. Oh, it was like a clockwork. So was the British Pacific Fleet. I mean, we were all hand in glove. What we had as an advantage, which to them, is our armoured flight decks. The York and all those big carriers that got bombed, they immediately set on fire, and they're all total losses. It was our armoured decks, 4 inches of Czechoslovakian armour plating. The one that the first one that hit the Formidable hit at a joint of four pairs of armour plating, and it got right in the corner, and there was a sliver of a bomb that penetrated the armour plating, went through the hangar deck, down into the boiler room, and severed a steam pipe. But apparently the engineer on duty down there was very smart and was able to cut off the steam. And within 2 hours, Formidable was back in action again. They'd produced cement and sand and cement from somewhere in the bowels of the ship, mixed up concrete and filled the hole in. And I saw the Formidable some 6 years later, when she was laid up in Rosyth Dockyard, ready for the scrap heap, and it was open to visitors. So I went down from Edinburgh to have a look at the old girl, and that cement was still there.
You said earlier about the greater comforts at RAF stations compared to Royal Naval Air stations. What did you mean by that?
Well, the fleet air arm of those days carried their bed around with them, you know, hammocks and mattresses. Whereas when we ever went to the RAF stations, that was all provided. Beds, blankets, pillows, But the Navy carried their beds with them.
You haven't said anything about what it was like flying in the Swordfish or the Albacore.
Oh, I loved it. I was lucky last year to win a seat in the historic flight, and to climb into the back of that Swordfish and then take off. The mere fact of looking back revives so many memories.
And the Albacore?
Albacore was a bit more comfortable because we had a hood which could be retracted or left down.
What do you think now about having served in the Second World War in the Fleet Air Arm?
I'm proud of the service. No regret. I left the Navy with no regrets, and I would have liked to have been promoted to... I was sent all the way home from the Pacific when the war ended to be made a warrant officer air, which, as all my friends that stayed on in the Navy did, and they finished up as lieutenant commanders. But when I got back from the Pacific War and reported to the signal school, which was at Arbroath, I was told that the course had started a week earlier. And I was furious. I said, I still got the signals that were sent. So I went to see Commander Shaw and told him what had happened, and he immediately got on to the Admiralty. And the excuse given to me the next day was that they'd forgotten to add my name, but I'd be on the next course, which would be in about 3 months' time. And I said, no way, unless I get my seniority and my back pay. Because the two things that mattered in the Navy were seniority and pay. And the answer to that from us is that they could not do that. It would be against standard practice. So I then put a request in to see Captain Sherlock, who was a VC man, and told him that I wished to withdraw my name from the warrant officer list and that I would leave the Royal Navy. And I got a blasting. He said, you can't do that. I said, oh, it's my request.
That was in 1947, was it?
Yeah.
Now, I think you were in the Berlin airlift. Can you tell me how that came?
Not really. We were participants in factors. I was still then flying Dakota passenger aircraft.
For whom?
But BEA. And we still were feeding into Berlin and back. But the real Berlin airlifters were the cargo ships. Right. We lost a Viking. One Viking got shot down during the airlift. But that was the only one.
How did that come about?
A fighter got too close. A Russian fighter.
But you were doing normal flights into Berlin?
Yeah.
Did you feel nervous at all?
Let's put it this way. As long as we didn't see any fighters, we were quite happy. But when suddenly there's a big red star bearing down on you, then... there was quite a lot of talk then on the RT with the ground control, and it wasn't very pleasant, put it that way.
Which airfield did you fly from and to?
Well, Gatow and Tempelhof in those days. Gatow was RAF, and Tempelhof was being run by the Americans then.
And yours were normal scheduled flights with passengers?
Mm.
Did you take any cargo?
Well, mail and things like that, you know.
So you weren't contributing to the airlift in any way?
Well, yes. in a small way. But we weren't the poor devils that, you know, were in this terrible time
Any incidents that happened to on the airlift?
Only being buzzed.
How would they do that?
Well, they'd come up and sort of linger behind you and sometimes nip over the top of you or nip underneath you. Frightening. You know, they're trying to put the wind up us.
Did you see anything of the plight of the Berliners?
Oh, all I can say about that is that we, as flight crews, tried to do everything to help the Berliners. All of us at Christmas time or holiday time were prepared to do overtime to enable the Berliners to get out to their cities and get them back. I worked every Christmas I spent out there. I always flew on Christmas Day and Boxing Day to get the poor devils home. I think they were grateful for it. One of the personalities on the Formidable that we in air operations were concerned with was the Canadian RMVR, Royal Canadian Naval Reserve pilot, who was on loan to and flying on the Formidable as part of the ship, was Hammy Gray. He was awarded the last VC of the war. He was a very volatile chap. And a very good pilot. He flew in the Corsairs on the Formidable and was senior pilot. Unfortunately, on the day before the ending of the war, he led a raid on the Japanese mainland at Onagawa, and he pressed home his attack. And consequently, he was shot down. But he was awarded a posthumous VC of the war. And a gentleman some years after the war had ended, Phil Markham, who was a historian, got in touch with me to give his story. I was not able to give him very much information, but it just happened that I had to give Hammy Gray a change in operational orders whilst the waiting to take off for this raid on Onagawa. I went to the ceremony at Onagawa laid on by the Japanese, because overlooking where Hammy Gray was shot down, there is now a pier or jetty, but in effect, a piece of Canadian granite, suitably inscribed, is on the hilltop overlooking the bay where Hammy Gray went into the water, and due respect was made by the Japanese and some of the Canadian staff from the embassy in Tokyo, and I had the honour of being invited to go out and participate and place a wreath on his monument on behalf of the ship's company of HMS Formidable.
Did you like Hammy Gray?
Oh, yes. Typical happy-go-lucky Canadian.
Different from a British pilot?
Oh, no, they were good and bad amongst all pilots. Even in civil aviation, there are some good, some not so good.